New Mexico has made a name for itself attracting important television and film productions thanks to extremely attractive economic incentives, but the state's film history goes back much farther than just the last few decades, and a new book chronicles the tales of many a movie that was made in New Mexico. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. It's my pleasure to have back on the program today Jeff Berg, whose new book, New Mexico Filmmaking, has just been released and documents many of the tales of the long line of movies that featured New Mexico as their subject or locale. Good morning, Jeff.
Hello, Charles. Good to be back again.
It's great to hear your voice. You're joining us by phone from Santa Fe. But when this airs on Saturday, you'll already be down in the area in Las Cruces for a book signing and a presentation of some film clips. I think listeners may recall frequent visits to this program when you worked with the Mesilla Valley Film Society for many years at the Fountain Theater in Old Mesilla. And part of that work was programming films made in New Mexico. Is that where your interest in writing a book about New Mexico's filmmaking history began?
When I first started programming the films, I was doing a film series, as some people might recall, at the Farm and Ranch Museum, and it was all New Mexico-linked movies. And at that time, when I thought I'd be struggling to find titles and such, I found that it wasn't a struggle to program the ones I wanted to program. So I started making notes about various things and looking for more obscure films and keeping tabs and all that. There was a book that came out about 10 years ago now called 100 Years of New Mexico Filmmaking, which was kind of a coffee table book with a lot of really nice pictures, a lot of really nice info, mutual effort by several writers. But it didn't cover a lot of the history at all. So I thought, at one point, well, this could be interesting to try and compile some of this. I can start looking around at archives and things like that to see what I could find. And it just kind of grew from there. I did some articles for various magazines over the years and kept notes on all that stuff and programmed more movies and started a film series up here in Santa Fe, which is a monthly series. And at one point, I just thought, like, there's nothing really, you know, there's really nothing on paper about any of this. So let's give it a try. So I happened onto a publisher quite by accident who instantly jumped on it. Thought I'd have an easy time finding lots of documents, lots of information about all this stuff. And to my shock, my shock and awe, there was absolutely nothing. The State Film Office had nothing. State Archives had a few files, mostly correspondence from the first gentleman who was a volunteer film historian back in the 60s, and so it became real. It required a lot of detective work, shall we say, to get a lot of this information.
And some of that detective work took you all the way back to the end of the 19th century.
Yes, yeah, it was pretty amazing that some of the things I found out. I happened on the first piece of film ever shot in New Mexico. It's a little loop piece called Indian Day School that a friend of mine had found somewhere for a documentary that he was making, which is sad is still gone by the side, but the gentleman who worked at the State Film Office as the kind of like the ad hoc historian, John Armijo, who sadly passed away about a year and a half ago, had compiled lots of information on silent films and a couple of the first early talkies, which he was going to write about for a silent film book, but right before he passed away, he handed over all his research to me, which was very helpful for the first part of the book, for sure.
So that very first piece of film that you found was from the Edison Company, 1897 or so?
Yeah, they made it in Edisleta, which is south of Albuquerque, 1897, and it played in New York at Nickelodeon's or the penny viewing machines for in 1898.
It's basically, I've seen it. It's just some children wandering in and out of a schoolhouse, right?
Yeah, not much plot there. Yeah,
but amazing for it 1897.
Yes.
Were you surprised as you did your research just how much production came in the teens and 20s during the silent period?
I was. When I was first talking to John Armijo and he was telling me some of this information, I was just really amazed by, it was like almost instant hooks to New Mexico by filmmakers, because Tom Mix had made a number of short westerns in the Las Vegas area north of Santa Fe, and a gentleman named Romaine Fielding, who was one of the biggest names of silent films, had a studio in Silver City for several years before moving up to Las Vegas and then leaving there to go to Galveston, actually.
That's one of the things that really amazed me. Was I was aware that for most of the last century, people came out to New Mexico to make films, but that there was actually a quasi-studio set up there with a few filmmakers who based themselves in New Mexico.
Yeah, it was amazing to read that because Fielding's one of them bounced all over the place. He was in Arizona, he was in Texas a couple of different times. Then he just kind of showed up and made some movies and then moved on. It was like a real portable kind of operation.
Hmm.
And his studio in Las Vegas was actually just two houses that happened to be side by side that he used. He was kind of lured there by the city fathers because he was considering going to Albuquerque, Santa Fe, or Las Vegas, and then Las Vegas went out at that time.
So. I guess the consolidation or centralization of movie making in Los Angeles by the late 20s and early 30s in many ways took all of these little nascent productions from various states and consolidated people in Los Angeles around the nexus of that movie making and became very studio bound, so that a lot of this location shooting for a number of decades kind of waned.
Yeah, it certainly did. And again, I can't really prove this because there's no real details about it written down anywhere, but I think one of the things that really got a lot of filmmakers here, even in the 20s, and again, especially in the 50s, was the fact that the trains went through the Albuquerque area, and Gallup especially. The train was seemed to be a huge draw, and people would see the Western movie-type scenery here, and I'd be like, there's a second reason to come through here, easy transport, nice scenery, probably cheap help as well. Probably
good weather.
Yes, good weather. But those were definitely hooks for a lot of filmmakers during different times.
It seems from reading your book that the 30s and 40s, while production continued, the films were still being made, it kind of waned a bit in volume, and the 50s saw an uptick.
Yeah, definitely. There was a few in the 30s and 40s. Most of those were actually bigger productions, and most of them only used the state for a short time, like second unit, perhaps, like Grapes of Wrath did, and the Texas Rangers, which New Mexico Star of Texas, one of many times. And then in the 50s, there's rumors as to why it really picked up in the 50s, and part of it, again, was the location, and the easy transport with the trains, and also the El Rancho Motel in Gallup, New Mexico, was a big draw because it was opened by the brother of a big film director who apparently helped promote it. And so there is a number of Westerns and a few other odds and ends shot in the Gallup area in the 50s.
I think for the last 15 years, at least people in El Paso and in around this corner of West Texas have been aware that New Mexico has been incredibly successful in building up its film program, largely from giving away large tax incentives. But I was not aware of the work in the 60s that really set the stage for that increase in film production. And you have a whole chapter on New Mexico sort of developing the first real film office of any state in the union.
Yeah, it was that was something I discovered kind of by accident, too, that the Governor David Cargo, who sadly passed away about a year or two ago, was really, really instrumental in getting the film studios and film crews here in the late 60s and early 70s. A lot of the productions were low-budget kind of things, like Truck Stop Women and stuff like that. But he also has some big things here, like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Part of the shooting was for Easy Rider was here. And it was a concentrated effort by Governor Cargo, author Max Evans, and some others, mostly based in Albuquerque, to get the studios and the filmmakers to come here. And they were extremely successful. There was, through the early 70s until Mr. Cargo left office, I'm guessing there was probably 30 to 40 production shot during like less than a 10-year period. You know, so he did a good job. So.
And some good stories in the book, you know, just how, I guess without a model to follow, they basically just started paying their way out to L.A. and knocking on as many doors as they could to promote New Mexico.
Yeah, they did. I just heard a funny story from a friend yesterday that I would have included in the book if I'd have known it, but one of the trips they made to Hollywood was Governor Cargo and, again, author Max Evans, who's a friend of mine who's 92 and lives in Albuquerque and is still on the go. When they planned that their first trip to Hollywood, they went out and bought secondhand suits, thinking they'd have to be sitting around studio office with a whole bunch of guys in suits and ties and glaring at them. And Max said that when they got to the meeting, every single person in the room, except for them, was dressed in brand new Western wear.
So they were anticipating what they might be wearing.
Exactly, yes. It was like dirt-free boots, 20-gallon hats shirts with collar stays. So it was quite an opposite of the thing, but it worked because they were really successful again in getting the the wannabe cowboys out here to do some stuff. So,
what were some of the biggest surprises you found along the way doing the research?
That was one of the biggest ones, about how that came about, how the
cargo era.
Yeah, the attempts by others to start the film office. I think they had a staff of two for a short time. And sadly, there's only four people in this film office right here right now. That and the number of films that have been considered lost that I discovered, especially films shot in southeast New Mexico, out of low budget, real odd things. Especially around Roswell and down in the Carlsbad area as well. The very first sound film was shot in that area, which is now considered lost, unfortunately. But I came across the county historian in Carlsbad, in Eddy County, who had, I don't know how he got them, but he had 50 or 60 stills from that movie. And that's pretty much all that exists of it for anymore. So.
We should mention there's a multimedia companion, if you will, to the book, which is maybe the precursor of the book. And you've traveled to most of these locales showing what you call the Made in New Mexico program, which is you've cobbled together a number of clips from extant films that you could find, and you narrate kind of a multimedia presentation of films and filmmaking around the state, and you're going to be doing that in Las Cruces today.
Yeah, I had hoped to have time to do a Made in Las Cruces show, but that didn't quite work out time-wise since there's just too much going on, but I've got the newest show that I have, which starts in 1912 with a piece of a documentary from a fight between Jack Johnson and Gentleman Jim Flynn, which is amazingly well-kept, shall we say, and then it goes to almost present day, so...
I know in the appendix of the book, you've got a list of your favorite personal opinion best movies made in New Mexico. What's your favorite?
Very favorite? I guess it would be a close draw between The High-Low Country, which was one of those written by Max Evans, based on a book written by Max Evans, or The Milagro Beanfield War, which helped entice me to move back to New Mexico back in the 90s.
Both excellent films, and... You've also got Kirk Douglas's Lonely Are the Brave there, too. Another wonderful film.
Yeah. And then there's a film noir that I think maybe three people have seen, one of the ones that was shot in Roswell, and it uses, I think it's a process called Cyclorama. Gives subtle, the original print was supposed to give you subtle messages while you watch the film, although the film is, I think, long gone, but it's called Date with Death. And it's kind of a really interesting little film noir piece shot in and around Roswell.
Hopefully that'll be discovered in somebody's attic one day.
That'd be great.
Well, I know you've been following your dual passions for cinema and history for a while, and it's glad to see your work finally in print. Thanks so much, Jeff, for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate it, and I hope everyone, including you, can make it out to today's show.
My guest today has been writer and film historian Jeff Berg. For more than a decade, Berg has been screening films and clips of films that were made in New Mexico and collecting the stories and background on these productions. His exhaustive research has led him to write a history of film production titled New Mexico Filmmaking, published by Arcadia Press. The book is available through local and online booksellers, and Jeff Berg will be signing books at COA's bookstore in Las Cruces today until around noon, so if you hurry, you can still catch him. Berg will also present his program Made in New Mexico today at the Rio Grande Theater at 1:30 p.m. The program includes clips from many of the films to have been made in New Mexico, along with live commentary by Berg. The Rio Grande Theater is located at 211 North Main Street in Las Cruces, and admission is $5. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.